Good evening. Like so many other of the industries we have described, the Shakespeare Enterprises started with an idea which the founders successfully exploited to create jobs. In the case of the Shakespeare Company, this idea was related to the sport of fishing. Back in the 1890s, if you had a rod and a reel, you had to guide the line with your thumb when you reeled it in. The result was that in the excitement of bringing in a fish, you often let the line wind unevenly on the reel, and when you went to cast it out again, you were in plenty of trouble. Well, William Shakespeare, Jr. was a successful caster himself, and he wondered why a mechanical device could not be made to wind the line evenly on the spool. He labored long and faithfully on a jeweler's lathe until he had perfected such a device. The result was the first Shakespeare level wind reel. That was back in 1896, 50 years ago. The next year, the manufacture of these reels was begun. Other inventors had been working along similar lines, attempting to make a practical level winding reel, but it was William Shakespeare's reel which first became successful commercially. It was the Shakespeare reel which popularized the sport of bait casting. Thus, the idea which launched the Shakespeare Company was not completely original. We have found that to be true in the case of other ideas which launched other industries. Jacob Kindleberger did not invent vegetable parchment, nor did the Sutherland brothers invent the paper carton. Much depends in these successful enterprises on the business acumen, the imagination, the courage, and risks assumed on the part of the founder. The freedom enjoyed in America to put new ideas to work, the opportunity which Americans have had to break away from custom and tradition, account to a large degree for the prosperity which our country and our community have enjoyed. I think it is safe to say that they account for the vast majority of jobs which the people living in the cities of Western Michigan hold. Much depends on whether the industry which has started to exploit one idea is sufficiently alert and fruitful to develop a steady flow of new ideas. This is the field of research. In one of our programs, we emphasized how large a part research plays in one of our industries, the Upjohn Company. But you find it in every successful enterprise. Shakespeare, for instance, didn't just go on indefinitely making the level winding reel which the founder first devised. Improvements were made steadily. One major fishing problem tackled by Shakespeare was what anglers call the backlash. Now, brakes of almost every kind have been used to slow down the spool on a fishing reel to keep it from overrunning the line and causing a tangled up mess. Shakespeare perfected a reel in which backlash is prevented by a very light, accurately applied brake. That not only was a boon to skill fishermen, but it also attracted to the sport of bait casting many amateurs who wouldn't or couldn't take the time to develop the skill needed to cast with the old-fashioned equipment. With this new reel, called the Wonder Reel, your wife or young son or daughter could learn to cast successfully in a very short time. Today, Shakespeare makes 15 different kinds of reels, some of them for saltwater fishing. The work of making a fine reel resembles the skill required in making a watch. Machinery is developed in Shakespeare's own shop to perform many of the delicate operations. I saw reels being turned out at the rate of one or two per minute on one assembly line. Each reel is carefully tested in a soundproof room where skilled craftsmen inspect each one for sound, rattle, and tightness. The manufacture of fishing reels naturally led to the manufacture of other kinds of fishing equipment. Shakespeare has a large department to manufacture bait, for example. Most of these baits are turned out of very light wood, aromatic cedar being largely used. Some, however, are made from plastic materials. One of the most delicate and important jobs is painting the baits. I saw 25,000 baits in the Shakespeare paint room at one stage or another of completion. Some of the paint is sprayed on, some has to be applied by hand. The operation is a pretty delicate one. For instance, one worker puts a dot of black paint in the center of the eye of the mouse bait. Incidentally, this mouse bait is something in which Shakespeare worked out a new idea. By putting a small amount of phosphorus in the material out of which the body of the bait is made, it is made to glow brightly in the dark. This, of course, attracts the attention of Mr. Fish, the one you're trying to catch when you go fishing at night. The line division was especially interesting to me, and it's a big operation in itself. Both silk and nylon are used to make lines, but the trend is to nylon because of its strength and because nylon lines do not rot or waterlog. Hundreds of spindles transform the silk or nylon thread into a strong but light line. The fly lines have to be enameled, and the enamel has to be baked onto the line. I saw an oven 85 feet high, into which several lines are constantly fed. The temperature at the top gets up to 360 degrees Fahrenheit. Another Shakespeare improvement introduced just before the war was a new design of the handle of the casting rod. This is the so-called true aim double offset handle, which makes accuracy in casting as natural and easy as pointing a finger. But the most exciting new Shakespeare development is the glass fiber fishing rod. I saw both bait casting and fly casting rods being made with these glass fibers. This idea was first developed by the technical director of the Plascon division of the Libbey Owens Ford Glass Company as a result of the successful use of fiberglass in making structural aircraft parts during the war. He experimented with fly rods made of this material and turned over the results to the Shakespeare Company. Experiments in the laboratory and by fishermen show that rods made with these glass fibers have marked advantages. They have a splendid casting action. They will not take what is called a set, that is, they will stay straight even after being bent repeatedly. They are very strong, and they are not affected by water or foreign matter in the water. All in all, this new rod made of glass fibers and resins looked like one of the major improvements in post-war fishing tackle. A new plant to manufacture these rods is being set up in Columbia, South Carolina. The manufacture of fishing equipment naturally led to other kinds of small metals production. A new company known as the Shakespeare Products Company has been organized for this purpose. The principal line is automotive and aircraft control. Quadrant and pedestal aircraft controls are being made in a California plant. The balance of aircraft and automotive controls production is carried on in Kalamazoo. Shakespeare specializes in remote, flexible controls. The hood latch control, the throttle control, and the choke control on your new car, when you get it, will most likely be made by Shakespeare Products. The schedule for the next 6 weeks calls for an output of 1 million pieces. Shakespeare Products also makes thousands of metal backs for loose-leaf notebooks. Have you ever been annoyed by the plastic knob on one of the controls in your car coming off? Well, that won't happen with your new car, for a process called induction heat, by which the metal is made red hot inside the plastic knob so that the plastic around it is fused, is being applied on these new controls. During the war, production of fishing tackle was, of course, suspended. The experience of Shakespeare workmen in building precision parts into precision-made reels made it possible for them to turn quickly to making such complicated devices as parts for the Norden bomb sight, a complicated remote fire control device for the Sperry Gyroscope Company, and intricate shafts for aircraft machine gun turret controls. Now that the war is over, Shakespeare is back in the fishing tackle business with a vengeance. It is estimated that after World War I, interest in outdoor sports increased by 30%, and it's likely that a similar increase will be experienced in the present post-war period. That is going to make lots more business for the Shakespeare Company. The maximum capacity of the Shakespeare fishing line plant at Kalamazoo falls very much short of meeting their needs, and in order to acquire a growing source, they have arranged for the transfer of their line division equipment to the Sioux Valley Company of Estherville, Iowa, an Iowa corporation. This company has 32,000 square feet of floor space, and when the new equipment on order, plus that to be transferred from Kalamazoo, has been installed, the Estherville Company will have a capacity of from 3 to 4 times their present line manufacturing capacity here. In order to provide room enough for new production, the line division, therefore, is being moved to Estherville, Iowa. With the other Shakespeare plants, this will make the company a coast-to-coast enterprise. In spite of its growth, it is still guided by men bearing the Shakespeare name. The founder, William Shakespeare, Jr., is still active and serves as treasurer. Henry Shakespeare, son of the founder, is vice president and general manager of the Shakespeare Company. William J. Harrison, who has been with the company for 35 years, is now president. The Shakespeare Enterprises give work to 956 people in Kalamazoo, and there are 17 salesmen who maintain dealer contacts in the field. Now, how about the folks who work at Shakespeare? Well, a couple of them are our guests in the studio this evening, and I'll let them speak for themselves. The first one is Mr. Lawrence Hayner. Good evening, Mr. Hayner. What do you do down at Shakespeare?
Setup man on the automatic screw machines.
A setup man on an automatic screw machine.
That's right.
How long have you been with the Shakespeare Company, Mr. Hayner?
23 years.
23 years? Well, you must be one of the veteran employees. Are there any who have been there longer than that?
Oh, yes. Quite a few of them.
I see. How many machines are there in this automatic screw machine division?
43.
43. And how many were there when you first joined the company?
16.
Have there been any changes in the designs of these machines?
No, I wouldn't say there's been any change, except we have our new machines, which are high-speed machines.
They work faster than the old machines.
That's right.
Well, now, just what does an automatic screw machine do?
They make most of the smaller parts of a reel.
Mm-hmm. Does each machine perform a separate operation?
The newer machines can provide 9 different operations.
On one machine?
On one machine, yes, sir.
Well, now, you say you're a setup man. Just what does a setup man do?
A setup man has to take the blueprint of a piece that is to be made. He collects the tools and the collets and the cams and gauges, and then sets the speed of the machine and see if the tools are cutting the proper size before turned over to an inspector.
I see. What are some of the changes in the working conditions at Shakespeare in these years that you've been there?
Well, I think that we have expanded quite a bit. Our lighting system has been greatly improved, and we have some new feeding devices on our automatics, which has cut down on our safety accidents quite a bit.
In other words, these safety devices prevent serious accidents from occurring, or at least cut them down. I see. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Hayner, for telling us about your job. Now, our other guest is Mr. Harold Underwood. Harold, what do you do at Shakespeare?
I'm assistant foreman in the machine room of the reel division.
And just what do you do?
Why, I see that 30 people have work and make minor adjustments.
On the machines?
On the machines.
I see. Do you have these 30 people under you? Are they mostly men or women?
Most of them are women.
Are a good many of them old-timers or are most of them new employees?
Well, most of them are older people.
I suppose some of them have quite a long record of service then.
Yes, in fact, we've got one boy, George Weisenberg, that's been with us for 30 years, and Lyle Dean, Clyde Wooden, and Herman Terman, who has been there a long time, too.
I see. Speaking of the manufacture of reels, Mr. Underwood, just how many parts, or about how many parts, go to make up a reel when it's finally assembled and finished?
The average reel, I would say, takes approximately 65 parts.
65, some more and some less, I
That's
suppose.
Right.
These machines have to do pretty accurate work, do they not?
They sure do.